Sabadutam Purana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiv Sakam Svitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindho Dina Bandho Vigapate Kopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tata Kanchana Gorangi Raya Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanda Sukadevi Namami Riti Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripasanubhyevita Padilanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Maha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Jagvaita Vidadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Thank you for coming. I'm going to read tonight from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5. It is entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text number 29. It is known as the peace formula. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suridam sarabhutanam kyatpamam shantim richati. Subhra's translation and purport. Person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Prabhupada's purport, the conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to obtain peace in the material world. But they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary of all human activities. Man should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord because he is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than he is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Shvetasvatara Upanishad 6.7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be the lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and the living entities, including the great demigods, are his subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with a complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is the path leading to bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute, and the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya. And that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. For it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is free from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends upon one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. The one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling above mentioned passions, remains fastly in the transcendental stage or Brahma Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being as the highest perfection of life. The verse again. Bhoktaram dhikatapasam sarvalokam ishvaram saridam sarvabhutanam gyatmanamam shantim richati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Maham Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasad Bhutai Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Janamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasgatya Desitarane. This is the peace formula that is so necessary to the society nowadays, because as we know, generally the world is not very peaceful. Although people are trying very hard to become peaceful. And here it mentions that unless one can become peaceful, there is no question of happiness. One time Srila Prabhupada was visiting Buffalo, New York, it was in 1969, and he asked the devotees during his first lecture at the temple, do you want to become happy? And since no one had ever asked such a profound question to the devotees before, no one knew the answer. So Prabhupada looked a little concerned and he asked the devotees again, don't you want to become happy? So everyone thought very deeply about the subject matter, but no one wanted to make a wrong guess, so no one said anything. Finally, Prabhupada asked a third time, don't you want to become happy? And luckily one devotee guessed and said yes. Oh, that's very good. So in this world, everyone is trying to become happy, but as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Deno svinyata dehe kamaram yovanam jara tathada hantara praptir viryas tatra namuyati. That the body that we're in is changing. So, being in a changing body, it is not possible to be peaceful because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. Nashti buriyo yuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavanaha nacha bhavintak shantir ashantasya kutak sukam. One who's not in transcendental or devotional consciousness or Krishna consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? In other words, unless we're factually convinced or realize that we're different from the body, there is no possibility of becoming peaceful. And if we're not peaceful, how can we become happy? Just like we're trying to be happy in this world by enjoying the senses. But unless we realize we're not the body, there will always be an anxiety even while we're trying to enjoy the senses. Just like to give an example, in November is Govardhan Pooja. And in Vrindavan, they have a very big and nice celebration honoring the cows in Govardhan Hill. So just like, for instance, if we gave everyone here a free ticket to fly to India for Govardhan Pooja, how many devotees here and guests would accept it? As you all know, Piri Mahana is a very generous temple president. So we're sure that if you ask him for at least one ticket after the lecture, I'm sure he'll give you one. If you have a family, maybe he'll give you a whole number of them. So just imagine we're flying over to India, Vrindavan, for Govardhan Pooja, and the pilot makes an announcement. And he says, Hare Krishna. Welcome to Air Hare Krishna. We hope you enjoy the flight. We have a nice 15-course feast. 5 curd subjects. Samosas, love jamans, and also pizza and ice cream. So we hope you enjoy the flight. We only have one other short announcement. My co-pilot just told me that the Hare Krishnas did not put enough fuel into the tank. So we're estimating that we'll crash into the ocean in around 1/2 an hour and you'll all be killed. But don't worry. We've been told we have first class servers on board. And that they'll be able to serve out practically the whole feast before we crash. And we're also showing you a nice film called The Hare Krishnas Eating Prasadam in Vrindavan during Gaur Purnima. So you'll be able to see at least half the movie. And if you really like the movie, just pray to Lord Krishna. And we can assure you that he'll let you come back and see the other half. So we hope you enjoy the rest of the flight. Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. We hope you enjoy the feast. Hare Krishna. Similarly, we're all in this material world, and we're all trying to enjoy, although we know either today or tomorrow or in some years, we're all going to crash. But in the meantime, we're trying to have a good time. So the question is, if the soul is actually eternal, and the eternality of the soul, as I explained yesterday, is not a Hare Krishna philosophy. That it is actually a science. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture at a university in South Africa, and he mentioned that transmigration of the soul is a science. But another visiting teacher objected, or one Indian gentleman objected, saying, how is it that you can claim that the transmigration of the soul is a science? It's actually a Hindu dogma. So Srila Prabhupada said, no, it's actually a science. 5,000 years ago, when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita And he said, he didn't say, we should say, he didn't say, my dear Arjuna, today I'm going to speak to you because I'm a Hindu god. And you're a Hindu, my dear Arjuna. And that, so naturally I'll speak to you Hindu philosophy. So according to Hindu philosophy, Hindus have bodies that change. They have to go from boyhood to youth to old age. And unfortunately for Hindus, they have to leave their body at a time called death. But luckily, because you're a Hindu, Arjuna, you'll get another body. So 5,000 years later, most of us are not Hindus, so we don't have to worry about having bodies that change. No, of course, it doesn't matter whether we're Hindus, or Muslims, or atheists, or dogs, or cats, or black, or white. Everyone in this world has a body that's changing. And within this body, in every body, whatever the species of life, there's a person who's aware of the body. And in spite of all the changes of the body, that person is not changing. Now the question may arise, why is it that the soul, who is eternal, now is it finds himself in a body which is temporary? So this is answered in this particular verse. Because basically, all the living entities who come to this material world are thieves. Sorry for the insult. But basically, everyone has come here to steal from God. And therefore, the illusory energy called Maya has captured the living entities and has imprisoned them in a material body. And being imprisoned in the material body, the material nature is causing the living entities to suffer so many different types of misery. As it says, Krishna Bahirmukha Bhoga Vanchitare Nikatasta Maya Nikatasthiyadare. That as soon as the living entity turns its face away from Krishna, then at once the illusory energy called Maya slaps the living entity into the material concept of life. Of course, in this present conception of life, we think we're having a great time. We think that this body is actually our worshipful deity. Instead of worshipping God, which everyone is denying in modern society, instead we've taken this body as God. Kamadinam katida katida palitas durni dejas teshamai jata na karuna na trapa no pushanti utsri jatam yatapate sampratam lavabuddhis tvam ayatam avayam sharanam mam nirkshvat madasya. So in so many different ways we're faithfully serving our material body just like a deed. As I mentioned yesterday, we wake up in the morning and immediately, maybe it was this morning I mentioned, we offer abhishek to our body. We look at it in the mirror and start decorating it, worshipping the deity, offering flowers within our mind to our body, offering it so many different types of food every day, praising the deity, glorifying the deity. We're in love with this body. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the greatest of them all? And immediately the mirror answers, it's obvious, isn't it? So, in this way, we're enamored with the body. But actually, the body is a prison meant for our suffering. Japatiya Dara. One time, Srila Prabhupada was in Dallas, Texas, where I was also, and he was on a morning walk in a very famous park called White Rock Lake Park. And there, in the distance, the devotees pointed out one mansion. It was the mansion of Howard Hughes, the wealthiest person at that time.
So Howard Hughes had gotten his money from oil, and the devotees, they went up, they went with Bhagavad Gita to his mansion and tried to distribute a Bhagavad Gita to him. So the guards stopped him at the gate, and they took the Bhagavad Gitas, but they wouldn't allow the devotees inside. So the devotees said to Prabhupada, we tried to give him a Bhagavad Gita, but he didn't accept it, or we couldn't see him. So then Prabhupada asked the devotees, if you could have seen Mr. Howard Hughes, what would you have told him? So one devotee said, we would have told him he was, we're model citizens and we're trying to do some good work. Maybe you can give us a donation. Another devotee said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And Prabhupada said, if I would have seen him, I would have said, my dear Howard Hughes, you've made all this money from oil, which belongs to God. So you've stolen it from God. And one day God's agents will come and they'll take you away and punish you. So give back your stolen property. So the devotees were quite surprised how strongly Srila Prabhupada was preaching. And then Prabhupada demonstrated this preaching when he was on a morning walk in Mayapur on the roof of one of the buildings. And during this walk, one of the devotees introduced Srila Prabhupada to one of the life members and said, my dear Prabhupada, this is the so-and-so, and he's an industrialist, he has big factories. So Prabhupada said, oh, nice to meet you. You're an industrialist, and what do you manufacture? So the man said, dressed in a very nice white kurta, white, nice white pants, very clean looking, said, oh, Swamiji, I manufacture glass. So Prabhupada said, oh, that's so nice. And where does the glass come from? So the man said, oh, glass, it comes from sand. So Prabhupada said, oh, very interesting. And where does the sand come from? So the man was a little pious, and he said, oh, sand comes from Bhagavan. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, Bhagavan? And Prabhupada's eyebrows raised up and said, oh, so you're stealing from Bhagavan. So the man was a little embarrassed, and he disappeared for the rest of the walk. But later on, at the end of the walk, he came up and said in a very excited voice, he said, Swamiji, Swamiji, I just want you to know that I give in charity. So far as eyebrows raised up and said, oh, so you're a little thief. So even the man laughed. So the point is that everything here actually belongs to the Supreme Lord. And as soon as we want to become the proprietor of the material world, then at once Maya arrests us and puts us into a body where we're forced into suffering under a material concept of life. Therefore, it's mentioned here that if one wants to get free from the problems of material existence, one has to surrender to God. Unfortunately, people don't realize their problems. Just like when Maharaj Yudhisthira was asked, what is the most amazing thing? So he said to his father, who was in the form of a yaksha, Ahani Ahani Bhutani Gacchanti Yamalayam Shesha Stavar Ischanti Kimascharing Utakparam. The most amazing thing is that although all of the entities are entering to the jaws of death, at every moment, so many living entities, those who remain behind think that they're going to live forever. So the point is, we're only here temporarily in this body. And that while we're in the material body, we're supposed to learn how to become Krishna conscious, who find out who the real proprietor is. Unfortunately, people don't believe that there is a proprietor. They think that in the beginning, there was nothing. And then nothing became very bored, so it desired to become something. And luckily some juvenile delinquent threw this bomb and exploded, and nothing became something. And then exploded and flew in all different directions for billions of years, and finally got tired of traveling.
and landed. And then it started to do something, evolve, and here we are now. So according to this philosophy, according to this so-called science, then if we examine it, then we should be able to trace our ancestry through some logical procession. In America and around the world, it's very popular to go through your family albums. So just imagine we're all sitting down with mom and dad and grandmother and grandfather looking through the family album. What do they call it? Something about going back through memory lane. And we're turning the pages, and there's grandfather, great-grandfather. He was a general in the Confederate Army. And there was great-great-grandmother. She was a pilgrim on the Mayflower. And we go back and back and back. And finally we come to our so great-great-grandfather's going all the way back. And we say, who's that? And our grandmother says, oh, that was Grandfather Harry. You see, his body's full of hair. And that's Grandmother Lucy. We didn't want to show it to you, but actually they were apes. You say, wow, unusual part of our family. And then you keep on turning the pages, and there's Grandmother Mouse. Her name was Squeaky. And you keep on turning pages, and finally you get back to one page, and there's a rock. And as the history goes in our family album, Grandfather Rock met Grandmother Rock, and they fell in love, and they produced a mouse. And later on, the mouse gave birth to a monkey, and the monkey wound up swinging from our family tree. So this is more or less what has gone in the name of science. This is what the, more or less, directly or indirectly, science is assuming that this is a fact. But actually, this is not a fact. It's simply science fiction. That we can see from men come men, from monkeys come monkeys, from mice come mice, and from rocks nothing comes. But still, they've created this philosophy. And they say that God is dead. Just like, for instance, if you go to the doctor, and the doctor takes your pulse, and he says, oh, it's perfectly normal. And then he takes your heartbeat, and it's perfectly normal. He takes your brain waves, everything is normal. And then you ask the doctor, my dear doctor, after finding out, after examining me and finding out that everything is normal, what is your diagnosis? And the doctor takes your hand and says, my dear patient, I'm sorry to tell you, I think you're dead. So similarly, in the universe, we look around and we see that everything is going on so nicely. The sun's rising at its appointed time. The sun's setting its appointed time. The snowflakes are falling in precise geometric patterns, with those snowflakes being exactly the same. And the scientists, they declare that God is dead, or there is no God. So this is not a fact. The most intelligent person in the universe, Lord Brahma, he says, Yatschaksha esha savita sakala grahanam raja samasta suramurti ashesha teja yas yagaya brahmati samrita kala chakro govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. He says that the sun is full of infinite effulgence. It's the eye of the Supreme Lord. The sun is so powerful that if the earth went a little closer to the sun, everything would immediately burn up. You could simply take your dough, put it on the sidewalk, and immediately it turned into chapatis or bread. And if the earth went a little further away from the sun, everything would become, the earth would become one big snowball. So you completely freeze. But because there's an exact relationship between the sun and the earth planet, therefore we get exactly the amount of heat and light necessary to sustain the life on this planet. So Lord Brahma says, just like in India, if you go there, they attach a bull. A bull is a very powerful animal and can pull a weight that 50 strong men would have a hard time pulling. But because the bull is so powerful, it's able to walk around in a circle with its weight and crush the grain. Still, they tie the bull by its nose with a rope. And they have a little hook on the in the bull's nose and on that around that hook. They tie a rope and they attach the rope to a pole. So although the bull is so powerful, it can pull a very heavy weight. Still, it cannot move 1 inch beyond the rope. In the same way, although the sun is full of infinite effulgence, is the eye of the Supreme Lord, still it cannot move 1 inch beyond its orbit by the will of Govinda. The scientists say this is by accident. They say this huge ball of fire, millions of times or thousands of times bigger than the earth, is just floating in the universe by accident. Of course, nothing happens by accident. If you go on the street and suddenly you see two cars, they crash into each other, and the police come to investigate what happened, they take out their pad, and you say, they ask you, what happened? And you go, don't worry about it. It was just an accident. There was no cause behind it. It was an accident. And the police, when I say, oh, it was an accident, no problem, and then just go away. No, they want to find out what the cause of the accident is. Accidents have causes, even accidents. Actually, nothing is by accident. Even the scientists who claim everything came about by accident, they don't actually believe in the accident theory. If everything comes about by accident, then why do they go to school to get their PhD degree? Why don't they just stay at home and by accident they'll get a PhD? Why don't they stay at home and by accident they'll become rich? No, they have to endeavor whatever they can achieve in this world. They have to endeavor, use their intelligence the best they can. But when they see a greater manifestation of intelligence, they declare it's by accident. But if they have ascertained that the sun has come about by accident, that the sun is moving its orbit by accident, if they've realized how it's come about by accident, then why can't they recreate that accident with all their intelligence? Recreate the accident and put a little sun over the North Pole and help out the Eskimos. But they can't do that because they don't know how the sun came about. They don't know how to even create an accident. They can't even create a little sun, put it in this room, and it can float around all winter around the room and save so much on heating bills and the light bills. So even a little sun they can't create. All they can do is talk and declare everything is an accident. But they can't do anything. But the Supreme Lord, who's they're decrying, he's created so many wonderful things. Just like if a scientist could create a machine like a male Rolls Royce and a female's Rolls Royce, and when they get together, they make little Rolls Royces. And you just give the little Rolls Royces enough gasoline and oil, and they grow up, and they become big Rolls Royces. That way everyone can get a Rolls Royce. But the scientists can't do that. But Krishna, he's created 8,400,000 different machines. male and female machines. And when they get together, they make little machines, and they grow up and become big machines. That if the scientists could create a machine, in one end you put grass, and on the other end comes milk, they'd certainly get the Nobel Prize for science. But Krishna has created a machine, the cow. You put grass in one end, and milk comes out the other end. Unfortunately, they don't give the cow the Nobel Prize. Instead, they kill the cow, decry its creator, and declare themselves God. So this is all called cheating. Therefore, the aim of the Krishna consciousness movement is to prove that actually Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that we ourselves are His eternal servants. And that only if we recognize Himself, Krishna, as the Supreme Proprietor and ourselves as His servants, can we actually become peaceful. The plans of modern society to become peaceful will simply be a failure. Just like in modern society, they've created the League of Nations and the United Nations, all to create peace in the world. But because they're all just like acting like animals, a dog, for instance, in order to demark his area, he lifts his tail and spreads his mercy in a certain area and demarks this as his territory. And any other dog who comes along, immediately there's my territory, you're out. This is my land, get out. So when the representatives of different nations with this dogish mentality go to the United Nations thinking that this is my land, then simply they'll growl at each other and bark. Rawr, I'm American. Rawr, big dog. Rawr, 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 rawr. I'm Russian. Rawr, 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 big dog too. They'll simply bark at each other. Rawr, 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 rawr. So this is all kind of dogish mentality. Because they don't understand that God is a proprietor. Even the animals don't have this mentality. Just like, for instance, if a bird from Russia flew into America, the American birds don't stop him at the border, demanding his visa and passport. Looking, the Russian bird flies in, the American birds stop at the border saying, sorry, we're out of trees, fly back to Russia. Even the birds don't have this mentality. But somehow or another, human beings falsely claiming that they're proprietors of this land, although we come here for a brief period of time and then we have to leave, still out of ignorance, misidentifying ourselves with this body, we claim that we're gods, that we're the proprietors, that this land is my land, this land is your land, from the Texas border, somewhere else, whatever. This land is made for you and me. But actually, it's not our land. It wasn't made for you and me. It's all an illusion. And as long as we remain in this illusion, we have to suffer being in this prison material body, falsely claiming ourselves to be Americans or Germans or Russians or whatever we claim ourselves to be. And then in the course of time, Maya comes along and kicks us out and sends us into another species of life. Maybe human being, maybe some other species of life. Of course, as I mentioned yesterday, I probably mentioned this at a university, Boston University actually. He said, if you act like a dog, then you'll become a dog. And if you act like a demigod, you become a human being, a demigod. So, one student at the end says, Swamiji, you claim that if I act like a dog, I'm going to become a dog. But I just want you to know, I don't care if I become a dog. As a matter of fact, I want to become a dog. So Prabhupada raised his hand and said, you have my blessings. So people don't realize that although they're thinking, well, all right, I'm an American, I'm maybe suffering a little bit, but I'm actually having a good time here. I'm in a very good position. But we can't stay here. The cost of time, material nature, will remove us from this body, and according to our activities in this body, we'll be forced to get another body. Therefore, one who's intelligent, one who's fortunate, he understands that this world belongs to Krishna, and we're obliged to utilize this body, our mind and our words in Krishna's service, and only by doing so can we be benefited and be freed from this illusion, this imprisonment of material identification, and get real liberation so that we become eligible to go back to the spiritual world. So by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, he's given us the philosophy, the understanding of what our real position is in this literature that he's translated, such as Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us a great opportunity to get free from all our problems simply by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So those who are fortunate, they'll take advantage of this opportunity, and others will falsely claim themselves to maybe making progress in this world, having a great time here, but they'll simply have to continue suffering from one body to the next. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
What's the position of religionists who accept that everything belongs to God, but have a philosophy that says God has given this to us for our pleasure, for our use and for our pleasure? So they're accepting God as the proprietor, but they took a wrong turn along the way. So what's their position?
They think that God has given us this material world for our pleasure.
That's right.
Well, one time Prabhupada was asked that if one is in the mode, what is the happiness for one in the mode of goodness? And Prabhupada said, if you think you're happy, then you're not in the mode of goodness, you're in the mode of ignorance. That anyone who thinks that they're happy or enjoying the material world is not very much aware of what the material world is all about. As I mentioned at the very beginning, in the midst of old age, disease, and death, if we think we're enjoying, we're in ignorance. If you're in the middle of a fire and you think you're going to have a good time, just like Prabhupada gives the story, one king, he declared in his kingdom that all lazy people will get free room and board. So of course, in the house that he built, all these people flocked in to get free room and board. His minister informed the king that the building is completely filled up and there's people standing outside claiming that they're lazy, that they should get free room and board. So the king said, set the building on fire. So they set the building on fire and everyone ran out. Except for two people who remained. And one man said, your back is on fire, to the other one. Why don't you roll over? And the other man said, well, your front is on fire. Why don't you put it out? So the minister informed the king that two people remained in the building, although they're on fire. So the king said, they're truly lazy. Give them free fruit. So certainly in the world we're burning, we're on fire, we're always full of anxiety. We don't know what's going to happen to us the next moment. We do know what's going to happen. Just like we want to teach everyone here palmistry in one moment. Anyone here knows palmistry? How many of you are devotees would like to learn palmistry in 1 minute? Anyone like to learn palmistry? No. One person. Anyhow, we'll teach you palmistry anyhow. There's a crash course. Everyone has a hand. Put it up. So look at it. You see you have five fingers. And one of them is called the thumb, the other one is called the index finger. So if you look at the index finger, there's a line that runs from the index finger all the way down the mound of the thumb. You can see that? So if you start at the top, that's where you begin, and then just go all the way down until it ends. You see that? That's your future. No one could have told you your future. Sometimes people tell you your future 10 years from now or 15 years from now. We're telling your future at the very end. So, in this world, we all come here, we stay for a brief period of time, and then we have to, it ends. And in the meantime, we're all suffering from anxiety because we don't know when it's going to end, where we're going to go, etc. So if we think we're enjoying, or God has given this place to enjoy, it's just like a prisoner, he goes into the prison cell, and they're torturing him. And he's thinking that this is paradise. So why would God put his children into a prison and torture them with old age, disease and death, miseries arising from the climate, from the demigods, just like this hurricane Katrina or this rain around here. So tornadoes, earthquakes, hurricanes. Why would God give us so much misery if it was for our so-called happiness? And miseries arising from this body, miseries arising from other living entities. So in so many different ways, we're suffering so many different miseries. Chita, atapa, bata, vrishana, iti, kiati, ema, nado, jagire. So I'm suffering sleepless days and sleepless nights, suffering during the day, the heat, the rain, the cold, and I'm thinking I'm enjoying it. So this is foolishness. God is not suffering or trying to enjoy in a place like this. God has a place where he enjoys, where everyone is eternal, everyone is full of bliss, everyone is full of awareness. And here in this world, we're suffering so many miseries, we're in ignorance, we don't know what's going to happen to us in the future, we don't even know we're different from the body, and everything here is temporary. So what kind of enjoyment is this?
The religionists have more than their philosophy, for they say, I'm acting piously, so I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to go back to God.
Yes, there are so many plants and trees and frogs and grasshoppers, and they all thought they were going back to God. But we get what we deserve, just like they have the Olympics. According to Krishna, at least, in Bhagavad Gita, yam yam bhapi smaram bhavam tyajan tyantikalevram tam tam evaiti konteyat sadathad bhava bhavitaha, that whatever we think of at the time of death, that's what we'll obtain. Yanti deva vrata devan pitri yanti putri vrataha bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti madhyajino prima. If you worship the demigods, then you become a demigod. If you worship the ghosts, you become a ghost. If you worship the ancestors, you go to the ancestors. And if you worship me, you'll live with me. Just like they have the Olympics. So in order to become an Olympic champion, for instance, an Olympic champion swimmer, you have to swim up and down the pool for hours at a time. So Krishna is so kind, he's thinking that why should people waste their time trying to become an Olympic champion? Become a very fast swimmer in the water. So in their next life, he gives them the body of a fish. And they can swim the whole Atlantic Ocean, back and forth. They don't have to put on a swimming suit and do so much training. Automatically, they become an expert swimmer. If you want to practice for the high jump, you have to spend so much time jumping up and down, competing. So why go through all the trouble? Next lifetime, Krishna will give you the body of a flea. You can jump three times, or the body of a grasshopper. You can jump so many times your height. So according to our activities in this world, we develop a certain consciousness. And according to the consciousness at the time of death, we'll get our next body. We may believe that because I've accepted someone as God or the Lord, but if I'm killing animals, if my activities are sinful, then I'll get the appropriate body in my next lifetime, which may not be that of a human being. It doesn't depend upon our sentiments, it depends upon the laws of nature. And we can see that human beings are very rare in this world. But insects like ants, or grass, or trees, they're quite plentiful. So it's much more likely that in our next lifetime we'll get a lower species of life if we act sinfully than it is that we'll become a human being. So people may blindly or falsely believe that everything's all right because I'm a good person, but there are so many grasshoppers who thought they were good persons too. There are so many trees, they thought they were all going to heaven, but they were surprised. Anything else?
Can I push it just a little bit more, Maharaj? Your answers are so nice. I'm worshiping God according to my scriptures, and I'm trying to enjoy the world that God gave me. So I'm worshiping God. One, you know, a monotheistic concept is one God from whom everything came. I'm worshiping according to my scriptures. I eat meat because my scriptures say it's okay. And my priest says it's okay. And my rabbi or my whoever it is. So then what's my position? And I'm worshiping, it may be a vidipurvakam, the wrong way, but I don't know it's the wrong way because I'm listening to authority.
Yeah, so that's good. At least you'll get some credit for listening to some kind of authority. But Krishna says, Andare Tandera Pagiyamanas Te Pisha Tantra Urudami Bada. If you're blind and you follow someone else who's blind, the result is both the person who's blind and the person who's following the blind person, they'll both find themselves in difficulty. So it's not enough, or as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, blind following and absurdly inquiries of condemn. Now once you not only hear submissively, once you get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiry. So we should hear from the right source. And we should follow the right source in the right way. Just by following someone who's claiming that they're an authority, that's not sufficient to make progress. Everyone is claiming that they're a good person. Just like there was a famous gangster in Chicago in the 1920s. His name was Two Gun Pete. You've heard of him. Yeah. So his philosophy is it's better to kill people with two guns than one. So he became famous as Two Gun Pete the Killer. One time he was on Lover's Lane, and one unfortunate policeman committed a great offense, and he showed his flashlight into the Two Gun Pete's car when he was having his pastimes with the goddess of fortune. And Two Gun Pete took this as a great apparat, took his gun and shot the policeman, the offender, and then got out of the car and took the policeman's gun and shot him again to protect his reputation. Unfortunately for Two Gun Pete, the other policeman did not appreciate his pastimes, and there was a big showdown between Two Gun Pete and the police, a shootout. But before Two Gun Pete was killed, he wrote a letter to his mom and said, Dear Mom, I'm actually a nice person. I try to do the right thing all the time. Unfortunately, people don't understand it. Please take out the cat. You're a son, Pete. So everyone thinks they're a nice person. Everyone thinks they're following the right person. Probably one time he was talking to Professor Kutowski in Russia. And he said, what is the difference between your philosophy and our philosophy? It's the same philosophy, actually. He said, our philosophy is you have to follow a leader. So you're following Lenin as your leader, and we're following Krishna as our leader. So you'll go wherever Lenin goes, and we'll go wherever Krishna goes. So you may be sincerely, as Krishna says, for Arjuna had asked that question in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Ye Shastra Udi Istruja, Yajante Sharyanvita, Tesham Nishtutaka Krishna, Satvamaha, or Rajastamaha. That what is the destination of a person of faith who worships according to his own particular faith? Is he in goodness, passion, or ignorance? So Krishna says, Sadvana Rupa Sarvasha, Shada Bhavati Bharata, Sharoyo Shradama Yoyam Purusho, Yoyat Stratus Eva Saha. That according to one's existence under the three modes of material nature, one evolves a particular type of faith, and according to one's faith, one has a particular type of existence. So we may have a particular faith, and when we follow it, then we get a certain result from it. But it's not all the same. If we worship in goodness, then we get the results of goodness. If we worship in passion, we get the results of passion. If we worship in ignorance, then we get the results of ignorance. Whatever we call it, whatever we label it, we'll get the results, because that's how the laws of nature work. So, killing animals is not allowed. Every living entity is actually a soul within a body. We may claim, just like there was one prominent religionist, I think it was Aquinas, Thomas Aquinas, he claimed that there are three types of souls. He said the animals have one, they don't really have a soul. The animals don't have a soul. Actually, there's only two types of souls. There is the only real souls are the men. They have souls. The animals don't have a soul, and the women have something in between. So that was his philosophy. No one's laughing. So that was his philosophy, that animals have no soul, men have souls, and women have something in between. So the fact is, it's simply a philosophy of ignorance. Animals, they're doing the same thing we're doing. They're eating, they're sleeping, they're mating, they're fending. When you try to take the calf away from the cow, it has tears in its eyes. Not that it's some chemical reaction. When you try to slaughter the animal, it's not that the animal, just like a rock, goes into the slaughterhouse. No, it screams and protests, just like a human being will do. If you took a dog and you took it into the slaughterhouse, people would protest because it would be crying. Because people understand that the dog is a personality too. But they can't understand how the cow is a person, although it seems to be a person. Nowadays people have become so dull. Even they have pictures of the children in the womb. They're trying to abort the children, cut it up and kill it. And you can see that the child is trying to avoid the knife and screaming, but they claim, oh, it's just some chemical reaction. It's just mechanical, trying to get away from the knife. So this is pure ignorance. They say give the dog a bad name and then hang it. So we may claim so many things by our propaganda, repeat it so many different times, and then claim it's all right. You can kill the animals, and eventually you can kill the old people because they're as good as dead, because they're not producing anything anymore, so they're better off dead, etc. So after some time, we'll kill the children, we kill the animals, we kill the old people, we kill the sick people, we kill the people without any hair on the head. And then we make some false philosophy just to justify our activities. We don't find out what the real philosophy is and act accordingly. In order to justify our sense gratification, we create a philosophy and then follow it for our sense gratification and then falsely believe that everything's all right. But that's a false claim. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grand Raj Mad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.